This is your daily news fix, the Daily Brief, right here on RCR.
Good afternoon and welcome to RCR's Daily Brief. It's Wednesday, March 5th, and I'm Megan McNamara. First, Paul Brennan has the latest headlines. Next, economist Michael Riddell offers an alternative perspective on Northland MP and Cabinet Minister Shane Jones's proposal for a special economic zone in Northland. We'll then hear from internet law expert and free speech union member David Harvey on Internet NZ's proposed constitutional changes, which could prime the organisation for a censorship role. And to finish things off, we've got Natalie Cutler-Welsh and RCR Signpost. Now to Paul with the news.
Good afternoon, I'm Paul Brennan for RCR. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky expressed regret over last week's Oval Office clash with Donald Trump and says he's ready for peace. He sought to mend relations in a statement issued Tuesday, a day after Trump halted military aid to Kyiv. Zelensky offered the US access to Ukrainian minerals, a proposal left unresolved after his abrupt departure from Washington. He emphasized Ukraine's appreciation for U.S. support, but acknowledged the White House meeting had not gone as planned. Meanwhile, Trump's decision to freeze aid sparked global concern, with European leaders scrambling to reinforce Ukraine's defenses. New Zealand's Navy faces critical shortages in equipment and staffing, prompting warnings from defense experts. Some have argued for closer alignment with the Royal Australian Navy. The government signalled plans to boost defence spending beyond the current level of just over 1% of GDP. Replacing the two Anzac-class frigates would cost $4 billion. Experts also stressed the need for more personnel and better pay to keep the NZDF viable. Wellington Water has revealed the price tag for two damming reports into the company was more than $300,000. The reports found Wellington Water was paying nearly three times more for unplanned water repairs than in other parts of the country. They also found widespread structural issues and alleged fraud, which has been referred to police. The government has confirmed a $300 million payout to Hyundai after scrapping a $3 billion deal for two new Inter-Islander ferries. A Treasury paper shows Hyundai's exact settlement is still being negotiated. After meeting the Korean company, Rail Minister Winston Peters says it will bid for smaller, cheaper ferries. Overseas, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has claimed that US President Donald Trump imposed tariffs on Canada to weaken its economy, making it easier for the United States to annex the country. The warning about Trump's threat to Canadian sovereignty came as the US enacted 25% tariffs on all Canadian goods. Canada retaliated immediately, sparking a trade war between former allies. Mexico has also hit back at US President Donald Trump's tariffs with retaliatory duties of its own. Tensions rise between Paris and London over a UK-backed plan to transfer $350 billion in frozen Russian assets to the US. The UK and Ukraine support the move, but France's President Emmanuel Macron warns it could damage global financial norms and unsettle Chinese investment in Europe. Now for RCR Quick Links. Richard Prebble is resigning from the Waitangi Tribunal, saying he will not participate in turning the treaty into a socialist manifesto. Speaker Jerry Brownlee has told MPs he does not expect to hear any more points of order over the use of the word Aotearoa in the House. Environment Minister Penny Simmons has deferred an update to air pollution regulations until 2026. More than 4 million people are in the firing line of Tropical Cyclone Alfred as it tracks towards the southeast Queensland and northern New South Wales coast. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has rejected proposals from Paris and London to send Italian troops to Ukraine. And the British Chancellor's inheritance tax could force more than half of family farms to go out of business over the next 10 years, experts warn. And that's RCR Bytes News for today. It's Wednesday, the 5th of March. I'm Paul Brennan.
Let's turn to a couple of interviews that RCR host Paul Brennan did yesterday. First, Michael Riddell weighs in on the proposal for a special economic zone at Marsden Point. This is to be considered by Cabinet in the first half of the year. According to Jones, an SEZ could include business-friendly regulations and infrastructure and facilities for customs, trade and investment support.
In the last week of February, we talked with Shane Jones about special economic zones. Is it something to get excited about?
I mean, Shane Jones gets excited about lots of things, and that's a good thing in many respects. Special economic zones, I think, are one of those things to be quite sceptical of. As you say, they've been used in plenty of countries overseas. The record is pretty mixed. Most commonly, they've been used in the best-known example probably is in China, where, you know, Deng Xiaoping got to the stage of sort of being willing to begin to open up the Chinese economy, had to deal with a lot of scepticism in the Communist Party and the rest of the establishment. So I said, well, let's try some things down there in Shenzhen. And it certainly worked, and a lot of that sort of more liberalisation thing has been broadened out into the wider Chinese economy over time. The problem for an economy like ours is we're not starting from that point. You know, we're starting from an open political system. And, you know, if there are good things that we can do to enable business and to enhance economic growth, as the government says it cares about, let's do them countrywide, not do them in special areas where, you know, one politician happens to champion them, one councillor, one set of lobbyists.
So we should be a countrywide special economic zone if we're thinking like that. I mean, we're certainly the right size to be, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just over 5 million people. I've heard the minister mention company tax, for example. You know, we should have lower taxes on business, but we should have them across the entire economy. That's one of the best ways to attract more foreign investment, which has got to be a significant part of improving our growth prospects. Same goes for the, you know, RMA type planning restrictions. The government's got legislation coming on that. You want to make things easy to build, easy to develop across the entire country.
Now to David Harvey on the proposed constitutional changes to Internet NZ, headed by Stephen Judd, formerly of FACT, Aotearoa. Internet NZ is responsible for managing domain names for websites, but has also become involved in social justice issues. The organisation was working with former Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern when she announced the Christchurch Call, a censorship initiative. Its proposed constitution would require that Internet NZ centre Te Tiriti o Waitangi in all its work and ensure users are able to enjoy the internet safe and free from harm.
The people who make up these boards and societies, etc., they seem to be from a limited slice of New Zealanders. It seems like meritocracy isn't a main driver here. It doesn't bode very well, does it?
Well, you're absolutely right, Paul. And just as an example, the new rules are proposed. The Constitution would establish a nomination committee, and the committee would receive all governance nominations and undertake a recruitment and vetting process for appointment or elections. Now, that means that basically there's this approval process before you can get onto the committee, rather than leaving it up to the membership. Crazy. Absolutely crazy and undemocratic as well. A nomination committee could only serve to ensure that like-minded, orthodox or approved candidates are nominated. And although it trumpets the need for diversity, it would seem that this proposal would do exactly the opposite, because what would happen is that the organisation's control, if you like, or governance would become atrophied. There wouldn't be any opportunity for new blood to come in. It's a sort of totalitarianism, Maoist, Mao Zedong type of approach to intellectual purity before one can qualify for board membership. And I hope that that doesn't make its way to the Constitution, because it would be appalling if it did.
I want to ask you about something else now. Recent talk of pulling independent platforms that are not using the broadcast spectrum into some kind of governance regime. That seems to be kind of happening at the same time. Is there any connection between the two?
No, there isn't, because Internet NZ is a private organisation. It has nothing to do with the government, although it works occasionally with the government. But it's an incorporated society, a membership-based incorporated society, and that's that. But what is proposed by Minister Goldsmith is a five-point plan about media futures, if you like. And although most of the provisions of that plan are pretty anodyne, like putting together Film NZ and some other funding organisation, I can't remember it offhand, and a couple of other things, that's not so much of a problem. But regulating broadcasting, or regulating the broadcasting or information space, is another ball of wax altogether. It's part of an ongoing drive. I mean, under the Labor government, we had the Department of Internal Affairs with the Safer Online Services and Web Platforms, and that would have caught RCR and various other streaming outfits. Now we've got this new thing, and I'm just wondering whether or not, because of all of the difficulties that Mr. Goldsmith has had with the Fair Digital News Bargaining Bill, which seems to be heading nowhere, he had to be seen to be doing something in the broadcasting portfolio, because broadcasters have been yelling and screaming, and particularly mainstream media, saying, help us, we need money.
Yeah, I don't quite see how that gets the money, though.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And, I mean, the simple fact of the matter, Paul, is that because the internet is everywhere, you just set up offshore in the same way that good old Radio Hauraki did in the 1960s.
Catch both full interviews on the RCR website or app. Now it's time for Natalie Cutler-Welsh and the RCR Signpost.
Thanks, Megan. Welcome to the Signpost, guiding you to RCR's top interviews, sharp insights, and real ways to take action. Launching today is Power Talks, part one of a three-part Rural Report special. Taranaki-based energy consultant Larry Blair outlines New Zealand's energy struggles and the challenges of importing fuels. Marie Buskey and freelance journalist and author Nicholas Shepherd unpack this year's Oscar winners and Hollywood's shifting landscape. While over on Legal Hub, Paul Brennan and former judge David Harvey discuss censorship and co-governance. Paul also talks to financial analyst Michael Riddell about potential risks of special economic zones in New Zealand and whether they could lead to corruption. And in this week's regular Rural Report, Don Nicholson and Jaspreet Boparai look at New Zealand's growing conversion of farmland into pine forests. If you missed yesterday's great features, catch Paul Brennan's fascinating interview with Ramesh Thacker, former UN official and political scholar, as they discuss Chinese naval activity in the Tasman Sea. And also from across the ditch, Tim Wilms breaks down the Australian election lead-up and the fallout from mocking the national women's football team. Rodney Hyde has an insightful talk with Hamilton City Councillor Andrew Bitter about council's excessive bureaucracy and his suggestions on how to fix them. And in Rodney's reflections, he looks at what RCR means to you. Another friendly reminder that you can now enjoy seamless listening across all channels on the RCR app and website. No more stopping and starting. Just hit play and let the content flow. Back to you, Megan.
That's all from us today at The Daily Brief. Of course, you can find all the links to the interviews featured in this episode below. We hope you enjoy your day, and we'll be back with another Daily Brief tomorrow. Until then, see ya.